You're listening to the Refined Hippie Podcast. I am your host, Rebecca Henson, and welcome to another episode. Today's episode is number 8, and I just want to start out saying thanks for all of your feedback from the last episode with my husband, Derek McKee. It was really fun to interview him. It's the first person that I've interviewed that is a relative, I guess. I mean, you know, we're married, so we're not technically related, but you know what I mean. But it was a lot of fun, and I definitely will have him back on. He just has such a great story, and I'm just so thankful to be with someone who, you know, we're kind of on like the same life path, and I don't know. It's just really great to be around anyone who is, you know, see eye to eye and open to new ideas and new thoughts and things like that. But like I said, he had already tried vegetarianism before me. I actually forgot to say it on the podcast, but we often get responses from people asking, like, did I force him to be vegan? Or, you know, I think somebody had joked, like, asking my mom, you know, oh, does he go off and sneak and eat hamburgers? And I'm like, no, he doesn't. If anything, he was vegetarian long before me. Like, he is totally, this was his choice. I never pressured him into it. It was just his own, you know, slow progression, kind of like mine. He was learning kind of along with me learning about nutrition, and then obviously like the moral side, you know, we're watching documentaries, we were learning the health benefits of it, and he just slowly stopped eating it. You know, we weren't eating it at home, and then he just stopped ordering it when we went to restaurants, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's mostly plant-based, and it was awesome. But if you are with somebody who is not, you know, plant-based and you are, or vice versa or whatever, I mean, everybody's on their own path. And obviously I would like to have everybody plant-based in the world, but that's not happening overnight, but it is happening. So, that brings us to today's episode, which is about dairy, because I was just rambling a little bit, I think. Today we're going to talk about dairy because this is kind of a hot topic. Dairy, I get mixed responses from a lot of people when they find out I don't eat dairy or drink dairy or, you know, eat cheese and all these things, because we are in a current paradigm that dairy is good for us. So a paradigm is kind of like a standard thought process, and, you know, there's lots of different paradigms. It's just what you're raised, you know, thinking. You know, slavery was a thing, and that was their paradigm. Some people thought that it was the right thing. It was freaking awful, but that was their paradigm. It's weird, but for us now, I mean, at one point they thought, some people thought the earth was flat, and that was their paradigm, and it didn't matter what kind of evidence you showed them, they were still going to believe that. And this is kind of where dairy comes in. And it baffles me, really, because for what I know now, it's like, why is dairy even a thing? But there is a lot of change happening. In 2018, the dairy industry lost $1.1 billion to alternative dairy, and the non-dairy industry, so all the yummy, you know, oat milks and almond milks and all these things, has grown 61%. So clearly there's something happening, and I'm so thankful that the information is getting out there, because for the longest time we have been brainwashed, I will say, by marketing and advertising. And we are in general all going to be, you know, kind of, well, I guess brainwashed to some degree by all of these things, no matter, you know, what it is. But I think with the information age and all the studies that are being done as well, that people are waking up and they're seeing results. They're feeling better. They're reversing illnesses, and it's pretty exciting. So, with that, I will start with kind of the background of milk consumption, and because a lot of people kind of just, it's commonly thought, I suppose, that dairy milk has been a staple addition to our diets from the beginning of time, which, yes, humans have been drinking the breast milk of other species, like goats and sheep, for thousands of years, but it has never been in the history of man and womankind that we are drinking milk, you know, on this daily basis, and also the process of the milk and all of these things. So it really wasn't until the mid-1800s when cow milk consumption began to rise. Obviously, it wasn't to the state that has been, you know, in the past 100 years, but it began to rise because breastfeeding became no longer in vogue. It was not fashionable to breastfeed your child. So that is when human consumption really came into true fruition. Before then, milkmaids would wander through the streets selling buttermilk, which was a byproduct, or is a byproduct, often given to hogs, not humans. Well, I guess back then, I don't know if they still do that. So how do we get to this place where, you know, the milk of another species is so highly revered and kind of shoved in our faces through marketing campaigns? So that started in World War II. The dairy industry was really suffering after the war, and they went to the United States government to get help. And one of the largest marketing campaigns in history began. And you know, like anything that somebody is trying to advertise, they'll do and say whatever they can to make you want to buy their product. I mean, certainly of that time period, if you look at the ads and the propaganda that was going on, it's just like totally mind blowing. You know, nowadays we look at most of those ads with complete disgust. I mean, you can just do a quick Google search for, you know, mid-century, advertising with like the cigarettes and the sexism. It's just like really, really crazy. So that's kind of the background of, you know, where we are now. And, you know, there's all these campaigns. I remember in the 90s, there was the Got Milk campaign, where all the celebrities would have basically like glue on their upper lip because it wasn't milk. Obviously, milk doesn't give you a milk mustache like that. It looked kind of nasty. But I remember I liked that campaign because it was like all these celebrities who I liked. And I mean, I had some of their, those ads like on my walls in my room. My room was like covered in fashion ads. Like it was like wallpaper. I had wallpaper of just like Vogue ads and obviously Got Milk ads, which is bizarre. But now look at me. So from there, I'm just going to start with kind of like all the different reasons why dairy in general is not good for us. So the beginning is that we have completely the wrong enzymes. Milk is the most common food allergen. And, you know, you don't have to be completely lactose intolerant to see the negative effects of, you know, when you consume dairy. Many people complain of gas, bloating, other digestive issues upon, you know, drinking a milkshake or eating cheese or any of those things, but they still just do it because, well, we'll get to why they do it in a little bit. But this is because after the age of 7, 75% of humans, depending on what region you're from, stop producing the right digestive enzyme, lactase, to break down the lactose. So this is the body's natural, you know, intelligence, knowing that it should be weaned from the milk of its mother because you're not a baby anymore and you don't need milk. So no wonder people have lots of digestive problems with it. So the next being that milk is mucus forming. You wouldn't believe the amount of people that I've heard who see a difference from ditching dairy as far as like sinus problems and anything that involves, you know, mucus in the body. A lot of mothers who, you know, have small children who are plagued by sinus issues, and they will be completely healed after just removing cow's milk from their diet. This is because the A1 casein protein found in dairy milk is mucus forming. Also, dairy contains lactose sugar, which causes mucus secretions. And so, yeah, there's a strong connection with cow's milk and early recurrent ear infections. Inflammation. Okay, so the body likes to be maintained in a neutral, you know, pH balance. And our bodies are constantly kind of going up and down with that and trying to neutralize it. So this means that when we consume acid-forming foods, the body will work extra hard to try to balance that pH. Well, dairy products, along with other animal products, cause inflammation in the body. Inflammation is linked to all disease. This is why cultures with the least disease have the least amount of inflammation, and they eat the least amount of animal products, including dairy. So I'm talking about the blue zones, which I reference often, which I could do a whole podcast on that sometime. But look it up. Just Google the blue zones. It was a very extensive study around looking at all the different, you know, cultures of the world, and looking at those that have the most centenarians, people who live past 100, and that have the least amount of disease, taking no drugs and all these kind of things. And what they found was that they don't eat very much animal products at all. Less than 5%, and some of them don't even eat any animal products. So check that out. Inflammation. The next thing that I want to talk about is the pasteurization of milk, which involves heating the milk to a temperature of 145 to 150. And then it's commonly sometimes kept at that temperature for at least 30 minutes, or they'll do like flash pasteurization, which the temperature is around 160, and they'll do it for a shorter period of time. But this process completely changes the structure of the milk proteins into something even more unhealthy than it was before. It renders whatever enzymes or nutrients that might have been there to be inactive. So another major problem with dairy milk is that it is often full of antibiotics. About 0.25 pounds of antibiotics are commonly added to the dairy feed to help prevent infection related to their unnatural and unhealthy feedlot environment, which I will get to a little bit further in depth in a few minutes. But these, you know, the dairy industry, it's not this idyllic farmland that, you know, we kind of have pictured in our minds, pasture and whatnot. These are industrial facilities where there are thousands of cows crammed together, and they have to give them antibiotics. Otherwise, they'll die because they would have infections, and they do have infections. So, of course, these antibiotics are passed along to the consumer, and this is one reason why we see antibiotic resistance. We also see a decreased diversity in our gut bacteria. I mean, because think about it. If you're consuming milk, you know, daily or even just a few times a week, then you're getting a little bit of antibiotic every single time. And, you know, as you probably, if you listen to my episode on the gut microbiome, then, you know, I spoke about antibiotics and how bad they are for, you know, our microbiome. Of course, they are a wonderful thing in certain situations, but you do not want to take them all the time. And, you know, no wonder we have all of these autoimmune diseases. I mean, anyways, there's a million reasons. So yes, that is really intense. And there was a study done in 2011 that tested milk products and found high amounts of antibiotics, anti-inflammatories, natural hormones, anti-malaria drugs, steroids, antifungal drugs, Again, this is all because they're in these concentrated animal feeding operations, aka CAFOs. So that's what the industry calls them, CAFOs. Which that just concentrated anything. That sounds terrible, right? So that gets me to the hormones. I said that, you know, there's natural hormones in that they found in the milk products, and oftentimes I've actually seen on the label of milks, when I've just been curious what they're saying on there, they'll say, you know, no added hormones, which kind of makes me laugh because, okay, maybe that particular dairy farm, yeah, they didn't add growth hormones, but there is still hormones in milk. That's what milk is. So what is breast milk for any mammal? It's essentially growth liquid. It's hormone liquid. It is meant to take a tiny baby, whether it's a hedgehog or a human, and grow it into the next stage of life. All milk is just that. Even, like I said, if the milk claims to have no added hormones, the natural hormones are there. That passes into the milk through, you know, through the mother to the baby. It's an intense hormone growth liquid. You know, consequently, this is why we see a rise in prepubescent girls and boys. Men are also known to be growing man boobs. Adult women are experiencing irregular periods and hormone imbalances. This can all be linked to the consumption of dairy. So, you know, we're seeing so many people with acne, you know, adult acne, I mean, teenagers with acne, hormonal issues. Will slowly disappear once a person removes cow's milk from their diet. So since I'm talking about this, you know, growth hormone liquid, I'm just going to talk a little bit about that. So what should seem kind of obvious, if you really think about it, is that we are not actually baby cows. You might find this amusing, but seriously, cow's milk, like I said, is made specifically for a baby calf, much like human breast milk is made biologically for human babies. Dog milk is made for puppies. Hamster milk is made for baby hamsters. It has the perfect nutritional composition that a calf needs to grow to be big and strong 700-pound creature. It is that hormone growth liquid made for them. There is no other animal on the planet that drinks milk after infancy. Mammals drink their mother's milk and then are soon weaned off when they no longer need it. Humans do not need another species' breast milk to survive. Genuinely think about that. That makes no sense. In my protein episode, I talked about just a little bit about the protein in breast milk. So the perfect food for humans with the most optimal amount of protein can be found in human breast milk. It is formulated just for us to grow at the most optimal rate for a human. And when we look at the amount of protein in all other mammal breast milk, humans have the least amount of protein of all mammals, so less than 1% by weight. So the protein content in cow's milk is double that of the protein found in human breast milk. So, and also the casein, which I spoke about earlier, actually I haven't spoken about that, have I? Oh, darn it. Okay, so we're going to get to that next then. So the casein that's found in cow's milk is also double of what is found in human milk. So no wonder, you know, feeding straight cow's milk to babies, human babies, can be so dangerous and can often lead to obesity. So that's going to get me to my next subject, which is casein. So casein is the protein found in dairy milk. It is the most significant chemical carcinogen ever discovered. And 87% of the cow's milk protein is just that, is the casein. So casein is, like I said, a known carcinogen. And then there's also IGF-1, which is also linked to cancer. So IGF-1 stands for insulin-like growth factor, and it is present to benefit the babies. So it's there for the babies, but however, when we consume it after weaning, that's when it becomes problematic. When we consume IGF-1, our bodies produce our own more IGF-1, and as much as 10% more. So if we have cancerous cells, the ingesting of IGF-1 will push the cancer to the next phase, the cancer promotion phase. It can also, you know, form tumors and then go to the next progression phase. Higher levels of IGF-1, and we see higher incidence of prostate and breast cancer. So each glass of milk daily increases your risk by 15%. So what about your bones? That's probably the biggest thing, right? I mean, that's what has really been pushing with advertising is our bone health, and that milk causes, makes strong bones. Well, one of the longest studies done, it was over 20 years long, following 100,000 men and women in Sweden. Also, there was another one done by Harvard. Both found that those who drank more milk actually had higher rates of bone and hip fractures, heart disease, cancer, and premature death. And like I said, that also showed that there was a higher increase in prostate cancer and breast cancer. So there's actually no association with drinking milk and hip fracture reduced risk. It actually shows an increase in risk. And this is not surprising, considering that the cultures that have that consume the most amount of dairy have the highest incidence of osteoporosis. So yeah, that is a main, you know, marketing slogan for the dairy industry, is the calcium that milk has. And it's true that milk has calcium. All breast milk does. When an animal is trying to grow into adolescence, it needs calcium to grow its bones. But the calcium content in milk, obviously, I would hope you agree, doesn't outweigh the health risks, especially when we can get highly absorbable calcium from plants. Spinach, collards, legumes, beans, all are rich sources of calcium. Also a thing today is that cow's milk is fortified with vitamin D. This came about in the early 1900s when children in industrialized Europe and America were developing rickets, which is the bone deformity disorder, which is absolutely awful. Which a part of that was that they were not getting out in the sun at all. And doctors were actually prescribing the children to go out. So that was a time period that a lot of, you know, they had kids working in factories and all this. And so, yeah, obviously that was a huge issue. But all pasteurized milk today has added vitamin D. And, you know, if it's all fortified, then we might as well just drink a fortified plant-based alternative milk, you know. Milk without being fortified actually does not contain that much vitamin D. So, but the absolute best and most natural and free source of vitamin D is the sun. And getting between 5 minutes to 30 minutes of sun exposure during the hours of like 10 to 3, even just 2 times a week, will boost your vitamin intake like crazy. And best yet, the body absorbs and stores the vitamin D for the winter months. So traditionally, sunbathing was encouraged for optimal health. So don't be afraid of the sun. Be cautious. Just don't overdo it. But the sun is a wonderful thing. Everything on this planet lives and grows, either directly or indirectly, because of that beautiful yellow ball of gas in the sky. So the next thing I'm going to talk about is sugar and saturated fat. Did you know that one container of low-fat chocolate milk, the one that is most commonly given to school children at lunch, that's what they give them, contains as much sugar as a soda per size? So that tiny container contains 22 grams of sugar and is the second ingredient. What? I know, No wonder the rate of obesity in grade schoolers is on the rise. In 1970, 5% of kids under 10 were overweight. Today, in 2019, that number is more than 50. 50% of children under 10 are overweight. That's just totally insane. So obviously dairy is full, I hope you know, that it's full of saturated fat and cholesterol, which contributes to heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, and obesity, all of which can be reversed. The next thing that I'm going to chat about is how addictive it is. Like I said earlier, it's really crazy how many people are just like blown away that I don't eat dairy or that I don't eat cheese. And they often say, oh, well, I can never give up my cheese. Well, I said that. Derek said that too. I mean, a lot of us say that, but there's a reason for that, you know? So yes, you know, you are probably addicted to it, but that is thanks to something called casomorphine. It's an opioid peptide that comes about as a result of the digestion of dairy. This enzyme lights up the brain similar to that of heroin. So yeah, it brings you back for more every time. You know, you just want one more little hit of cheese, right? So it takes 10 pounds of milk to make 1 pound of cheese. And as milk is turned into cheese, most of its water is removed, leaving behind concentrated casein and fat. So concentrated dairy products like cheese have especially high levels of opiates, even morphine. So like I said, no wonder so many people are addicted to it and it's their weakness, you know. But it does take 22 days to change your microbiome, which, again, referencing that gut microbiome episode, which is what, you know, kind of dictates what you crave. So if you could get over 22 days of without eating cheese, you could get over it. I promise. So my next thing, I've kind of gone over, I guess, all the main highlights that I wanted to talk about. I'm just kind of looking over my bullet points that I wanted to address. So the next thing is that, okay, I say this kind of a lot, but just because something has been done for a long period of time does not make it right. You know, people have been raping for thousands of years. Does that make it right? People have been murdering. Does that make it right? I mean, take any movement in human history. Slavery, women's rights, civil rights. And when it comes to animal rights, it's the same. Dairy cows serve no better fate than the meat cattle. They all end up in the same place, which is someone's plate. You know, this idyllic countryside image of a cow grazing in the meadow has been ingrained in our minds, you know, I mean, but the true nature of today's dairy industry could not be further from that scene. 97% of cattle raised in the United States are factory farmed. They come from these CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operation kind of things. And this means that they are subjected to deplorable cramped conditions. This is why they are given large quantities of antibiotics to counteract the effects of these conditions. The females are also given these because they end up with extreme mastitis. Almost all of them have mastitis nowadays. They are manipulated and artificially inseminated over and over and over. So they have all of these, you know, terrible, painful mastitis, which also puts pus in the milk, which, you know, I didn't touch on that, but there is a certain percentage of allowable pus in our milk. And the industry has actually keeps increasing that. So because the problem is so bad. And they keep increasing the allowable, you know, amount of pus in our milk. But yeah, so after the females are artificially inseminated over and over in what the industry calls a rape rack. So the cows are forced to give birth to a baby that they've already bonded with, just like humans. And then that baby is taken away from them within a couple minutes or a couple hours. There are plenty of just devastating videos line showing the mother's chasing after, you know, the men who come to take her baby, and the babies are crying and the mother is crying and chasing. It's just so, so sad. And if the baby is a boy, he will be sent to slaughter to be veal. So he'll live, you know, from a week to maybe 10 or 15 weeks. And if the baby is a female, then she will serve the same fate as her mother. She'll be trapped in a 3x5 cage for about the first year of her life. And then she will be impregnated and forced to have that same short life as her mother. So after 4 to 5 years, when the female is literally bred and milked dry, she will be no longer considered profitable to the industry and will be sent to slaughter to be served as hamburger meat. And a natural lifespan for a cow is about 25 years. So there's a lot of reasons why consuming dairy milk is really an archaic thing to be doing at this point. It's not good for our health. It's certainly not good for the cows. And at this point, there are so many alternatives, you know. Clearly, the body does not need dairy, and it should be eliminated from our diets. And there are so many different alternatives. There are different nut milks. I mean, I've made my own almond milk. It's super easy. You just do 1 cup of almonds to about 3 to 4 cups of water. You blend it. You could put a date in there, maybe some vanilla, and then you just get a nut bag. You know, it's a nut milk bag. And you strain it, and you have almond milk. It's amazing, and it's so easy. But yeah, I mean, there's oat milk, there's cashew milk, soy, coconut, rice. I'm really loving oat milk right now. That is kind of a new thing. And then as far as cheeses, there are all kinds of different healthy cheeses that are made out of cashews. One of my favorite brands is Miyoko's. They make a mozzarella that actually bubbles and melts like a normal mozzarella. I put it on my pizza. Miyoko's is good. Kite Hill is really great. These are going to have really wonderful ingredients. They are not highly processed like some of the earlier cheeses. Daiya is really highly processed and has a lot of oil, so that's not really a good option. But yeah, there are a lot of really great options out there. So my personal thoughts at the end, I wanted to say something about, you know, the farmers, because a lot of times when I'm looking online, there's, you know, a lot of comments about how sad it is about their industries and they're losing money and all of this kind of stuff. I mean, like I said, most of the dairies are these large factory farms, but there are still some mom and pops. But, you know, times change and we have to adapt. You know, when the horse and buggy was around, obviously they had to figure out and diversify or change what they were making, you know. And I think at this point, you know, we really need to strive for what is best for our planet, our bodies, and the lovely creatures that we share this place with, you know. And cows are absolutely so beautiful and really intelligent. They're coined as the grass puppies because of their playful manner. Like, just Google grass puppy and there is so many videos of them playing with balls and like just jumping and leaping in the air. I mean, they're so freaking awesome. And yeah, as a species, it just perplexes me that we drink another species' breast milk, you know? I mean, if you were from a different planet and you came to Earth, you would be like, what are these humans doing? So bizarre. Anyways, so that's kind of, I guess I'll leave it at that. Again, as always, I really appreciate everyone who has been listening and commenting. And yeah, if you're enjoying these, please subscribe and also write a review if you're listening on pretty much anything. I think I know for Apple Podcasts, it's pretty easy to leave a review, but that also helps with SEO and it helps for other people to be able to find the podcast who might be searching for this kind of information. So it benefits everyone, right? And until next time, my friends, peace and plants.